Blog Talk Radio.
Smoke News Radio Podcast. Welcome to Smoke News Radio 2020 with your host, Jason Brodsky.
Hello. You've tuned in to Smoke News Radio, episode 130. My name is Jason Brodsky. I'm your host. Let's go jump into some news articles I found. First, we have from thetennessean.com, what is Delta 8 and its legal status? Here's what you need to know about the cannabis variant. State lawmakers this year proposed, then backed away from, a plan to outlaw cannabis businesses in Tennessee. After an outcry from business owners, lawmakers pitched a plan to regulate the cannabis business. The plan was also dropped, leaving Tennessee's $180 million hemp industry in a state of legal limbo. While it didn't specifically address Delta 8 THC, the 28 U.S. Farm Bill effectively legalized it through a loophole that allowed the sale of hemp-derived Delta 8 THC products in areas where recreational use of cannabis was prohibited, as well as where medicinal marijuana required medical authorization. According to a 2020 news release by the University of Buffalo, by late 2020, Delta 8 THC exploded in popularity. This has led to a boom in the sale of products containing cannabinol, that's Delta 8 tetrahydrocannabinol, and lower amounts of Delta 9 THC, which is more associated with traditional marijuana. From Knoxville News, has high demand for downtown dab bar, the Holistic Connection, THC for short. What is Delta 8? According to the FDA, Delta 8 tetrahydrocannabinol, also known as Delta 8 THC, a psychoactive substance in the cannabis sativa plant, of which marijuana and hemp are two varieties. Delta 8 is one of over 100 cannabinoids produced naturally by the cannabis plant, but it is not found in significant amounts in the cannabis plant. Delta 8 comes in the form of gummies, vape cartridges, tinctures, and other products. So how is Delta 8 THC and CBD different? According to the Daily Advertiser, THC and CBD are both chemicals known as cannabinoids found in the marijuana plant, according to the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. The THC has psychoactive properties and can get a person high. THC is typically known as weed and is legal for recreational use in more than a dozen U.S. states. CBD is derived from hemp plants, which are the same species as marijuana, but contain virtually none of the psychoactive compounds that get people high. To be legal, CBD must contain less than 0.3% of THC. According to the FDA, some broad-spectrum CBD products contain no THC. CBD's chemical compound doesn't alter a person's mental state and can be harvested from the same place as THC, but it is mostly taken from the hemp cannabis plant. CBD can help with sleep, anxiety, and stress. Does CBD get you high? What about Delta 8? CBD, because of the very limited amount of THC it legally contains, person high. Legal CBD products can only have 0.3% THC. Comparably, marijuana seized by the United States Drug Enforcement Agency in 2018 averaged more than 15% THC. Side effects of CBD may include dry mouth, diarrhea, reduced appetite, drowsiness, and fatigue, cites the Mayo Clinic. The chemical can also interact with other medications. If you have a heart condition or take blood thinners, some doctors recommend staying away from CBD. However, Delta 8 contained THC, which is that psychoactive substance that can get a person high. What's the difference between Delta 8 and Delta 9? According to a news release from the University of Buffalo, Delta 8 is a hemp-derived cousin of Delta 9 THC. Researchers from the University at Buffalo and the University of Michigan have partnered with a Buffalo-based manufacturer of CBD products in an effort to learn more about the benefits and potential drawbacks of Delta 8 THC and better inform lawmakers, public health officials, and consumers and others. The research team just published two papers based on their survey of more than 500 participants' experiences with THC and how it compared to cannabis. The words of one user best describes the aching views shared by the survey participants that Delta 8 THC is like Delta 9's nice younger sibling because it provides all the benefits with fewer adverse reactions. So what does Delta 8 do to the body? In all, 521 people from 38 states, 29% from New York, participated in the mentioned survey, and they found about two-thirds said they consumed Delta 8 through edibles such as gummies. Experiences with Delta 8 were characterized predominantly by relaxation, pain relief, and euphoria, with most participants saying they could perform their normal activities, experiencing the adverse side effects associated with cannabis use, such as paranoia, anxiety, or the munchies. 51% reported using Delta 8 THC to treat a range of health and medical conditions, primarily anxiety or panic attacks, stress, depression, or bipolar disorder, and chronic pain. 78% said they had not told their primary care provider that they used Delta 8 because they lacked confidence in their physician's ability to integrate medical cannabis into their treatment. On average, participants experiences of paranoia and anxiety using Delta 8 THC were between not at all and a little. Participants also showed little knowledge on effective doses of Delta 8 and said most of what they did not know about it came from the internet or their own experiences. However, everything comes with risk. The FDA warns that Delta 8 may be harmful. Side effects could include vomiting, hallucinations, loss of consciousness, trouble standing, memory loss, trouble with coordination, dry mouth, changes in appetite and weight. Now, is Delta 8 federally legal? The hemp-derived cannabis products, including those that can produce a high similar to traditional marijuana, are legal under federal law, thanks to a large part to a 2018 farm bill broadly legalizing hemp production, according to the CFAH.org. Delta 8 THC is federally legal as long as it is extracted naturally from hemp. All right, thank you. You guys are listening to Smoke News Radio with your host, Jason Brodsky. Naturally from hemp. Some extraction processes. They're not natural. All right. Next from Reuters.com. Zimbabwean farmers hope for a whiff of the cannabis boom. Zimbabwe legalized medical marijuana in 2018, seeks to expand beyond tobacco for badly needed export dollars, but farmers face costs, regulatory hurdles, and the global cannabis trade could be worth $272 billion by 2028. In Harare, Zimbabwean farmers looking to cash in on a global boom in medicinal cannabis face a litany of costs and regulatory barriers. But growers like Munyardzi Nyungu are betting it will boost their fortunes after decades of economic decline. The Southern African country became one of the first in Africa to legalize the production of medical cannabis in 2018, hoping for a fresh income stream of badly needed export dollars, and had issued 57 licenses. With finance coming in from foreign companies like U.S.-based King Kong Organics, African-American farmers like Nyongo, 35, who had struggled to prosper in moribund economy, are looking to branch out from traditional crops. Oh. Okay, then. Oh, very nice. Smoke News Radio. Sano African quotes, "We stand to sell cannabis at $25 per kilogram, which is 5-6 times more than what a good give you. We are actually sitting on a green gold mine. The global cannabis industry could be worth $272 billion by 28, according to Barclays Analysts and Zimbabwe's finance minister. Mthuli Mnube has said the country wants at least $1 billion of that, more than it currently makes from its top agricultural export, tobacco. As Africa's biggest tobacco provider, Zimbabwean officials also recognize the need to diversify away from the addictive narcotic that is proven to be ruinous to the health of smokers and those around them. Cannabis is seen as a less harmful alternative to cigarettes, and its cannabinoidal widely accepted as a natural remedy. But challenges remain, not least the huge cost of getting set up amid regulations such as the requirement to use a greenhouse to meet the criteria for organically grown cannabis. It's necessary to be able to sell it to the medical market. Nyong'o quotes, "A greenhouse is very costly. This entire greenhouse, you need something around $500,000 just to set up the structure, not including the drip system and seed inputs." Nyong'o's U.S.-based partner, King Kong Organics, which supplies seed and other inputs, purchased the greenhouses under an offtake agreement that will see the company buying the cannabis crop for processing. That, he said, brings the cost of growing a single hectare of cannabis up to $2.5 million. He and other producers are currently lobbying the government to relax the rules and lower the costs. The Zimbabwe Investment and Development Agency, which includes cannabis producers, did not respond to a request for comment. Zorodzai Morovike, the CEO and founder of the Zimbabwe Industrial Hemp Trust, quotes, "If anyone is going to grow medical-grade cannabis, it's going to be at their risk because there are too many variables. So much can go wrong. Still, the rewards could be substantial." Operating since 2003, Nyong'o's forest farm has been growing traditional crops of tobacco and maize and raising cattle. But acquiring the cannabis license in 2020, one of his 40 farmhands, now 20 work on the cannabis plants, which he expects to earn $2.5 million in profit from the first harvest in August, significantly higher than what he earned from his other crops and livestock. Next on Smoke News Radio with Jason, we've got from the jpost.com, medical cannabis shown to reduce pain in cancer patients. The peer review study found that for most cancer patients, pain levels improved significantly and other symptoms also decreased with the use of medical cannabis. And medical cannabis appears to be highly effective in the battle against cancer. Pain, according to a Technion study published on Friday in Frontiers in Pain Research, according to the Ministry of Health, Israel, the highest rate of cannabis patients in relation to the population, despite it being classified as a dangerous drug and not being officially registered as a medication, the peer review study found that for most cancer patients, pain levels improved significantly and other symptoms also decreased with the use of medical cannabis. Oncology patients commonly suffer from depression, anxiety, insomnia, in addition to pain during treatment. Suffering through such symptoms worsens a patient's quality of life and can even negatively affect the prognosis. David Mary, associate professor at the Technion Israel Institute of Technology, quotes, "Traditional cancer-related pain is mainly treated by opioid anesthetics, but most oncologists perceive opioid treatment as hazardous, so alternative therapies are required," explains David Mary. "Opioids are highly effective pain relievers, but they can come with uncomfortable side effects. More importantly, many of them, particularly the synthetic opioid fentanyl, are highly addictive and can lead to death by overdose. Bystanders watch as Catalado ambulance." Now, patients, quote, Gil Barcia, associate professor at the Amharic Medical Center of Fuya, quotes, "Patients completed anonymous questionnaires before starting treatment, and again at several time points during the following 6 months. We gathered data on a number of factors, including pain measures, analgesic consumption, cancer symptom burden, sexual problems, and side effects. Upon analyzing the data, researchers found that the patients had noticeably improved and critically their opioid use was significantly reduced. Nearly 50% of the patients stopped all other pain medication after 6 months of medical cannabis treatment." Mary concludes, "Although our study was a very comprehensive and presented additional perspectives on medical cannabis, the sex, age, and ethnicity, as well as cancer types and the stage of the cancer, meant the variety of patients in our study was wide-ranging. Therefore, future studies should investigate the level of effectiveness and medicinal cannabis in specific subgroups of cancer patients' more shared characteristics." listening to Smoke News Radio with your host, Jason Brodsky. Next, we have from neuroscience news.com, cannabis users require more sedation for endoscopy. From the American Gastroenterology Association, patients who use cannabis required higher levels of sedation during gastric endoscopies than non-users, according to research to be presented at Digestive Disease Week 2022. As cannabis is legalized in more places and usage rises, clinicians should be aware of patients' habits and prepare themselves and their patients for increased sedation and accompanying risks, quotes researchers. Patients didn't have increased awareness or discomfort during procedures, but they did require more drugs, quotes Yasmin Nasir, lead researcher, medical doctor, PhD at the Schneider Institute for Chronic Diseases, Cumming School of Medicine, University of Calgary. Researchers conducted a prospect 419 adult outpatients undergoing endoscopic procedures at three Canadian centers. Procedures were conducted under conscious sedation, which leaves the patient relaxed and comfortable, but partially conscious during the procedure. Each patient completed two questionnaires, one before the procedure about their cannabis use and another afterwards, indicating their awareness and comfort levels during the procedure. The questionnaires were analyzed along with details about the use of sedatives, midazolam, fentanyl, dipraglurant during the procedure. These shows cannabis leaves in a person's hands. Cannabis use was not associated with higher use of sedation during colonoscopy. Gastroscopy generally requires more sedation than colonoscopy because the inserted scope causes irritation in the upper part of the gastrointestinal tract, often triggering the gas reflex. Cannabinoid use was not independently associated with fentanyl use or adverse effects, nor was it associated with intraprocedural awareness or discomfort. This study looked at whether patients were users or non-users of cannabis, but did not examine the timing, quantity, or route of cannabis intake prior to procedure, whether it was inhaled, vaporized, ingested, or otherwise. Researchers say these variables could be the basis for future study. Also, researchers only examined the impacts of baseline cannabis use during procedures that use conscious sedation and did not examine its impact on proforal sedation, which is more commonly used in the United States. All right. Get the those areas cleaned out, and you might need a little more sedation. Here we go. Next, from Smoke News Radio, with your host, Jason Brodsker, we've got from WesternMassNews.com, cannabis cafes could be coming to Massachusetts Springfield. The Massachusetts Cannabis Control Commission has voted to approve a pilot program for cannabis cafes, and Springfield is one of the communities that has the opportunity to participate if the bill passes. Cannabis consumption areas or cafes can be found in states like California, Oregon, and Colorado. Pretty soon, Massachusetts could. The Massachusetts House of Representatives passed a cannabis equity bill. It passed in the Massachusetts Senate a few weeks ago. As part of the bill, State Senator Adam Gomez said a pilot program can be implemented in Massachusetts. Quoting, "It's illegal still for you to use marijuana in public spaces, so these social consumption sites need to be created to make sure that in different areas across the street where we have tourism and, you know, that people come here and maybe want to indulge in some of our dispensaries, because obviously it's still not federally legal to acquire marijuana in some states." A few communities across the state, including Springfield, have the opportunity to participate in the program. Despite the potential economic benefits, Gomez believes changes still need to be made to the legality of marijuana. Gomez quotes, "I think that we're going to open up an industry for communities to be able to make money of cannabis, then we have to, you know, end the prohibition entirely, specifically even on low-level drug offenses, specifically having to deal with marijuana." Gomez said the bill is now on Governor Charlie Baker's desk, awaiting his signature to become law. It will then be on local governments and businesses to shape the social consumption industry. However, what do local dispensaries think of this growth? INSA officials said they're all for it. Quotes Peter Gallagher with INSA and a watermelon, quote, "Overall, I think it's a great thing for the cannabis industry and a great thing for Massachusetts." Western Mass News also reached out to Springfield Mayor Dominic Sarno's office for a statement, quoting, "My administration has already established a very successful, fair, and transparent marijuana licensing selection process. And when the time comes, we will do a careful, cautious, and thorough review, always to see what is in the best interest for our citizens when it comes to public health, safety, and economic opportunities." Thank you. You guys are listening to Smoke News Radio with your host, Jason Brodsky. Next, we have from CNN.com, I have million free cannabis plants to be distributed to Thai households. Chernivikura, the Thai government will distribute 1 million free cannabis plants to households across the nation in June to mark a new rule allowing people to grow cannabis at home, its health minister said. Health Minister Anutin Jernrikul announced the move in a Facebook post on May 8th in which he expressed his intention for cannabis plants to be grown like household crops. The new rule, which comes into force on June 9th, will allow people to grow cannabis plants at home after notifying their local government, but the plants will have to be of medical grade and used exclusively for medicinal purposes. Additionally, the cannabis cannot be used for commercial purposes without further licenses. The move is the latest step in Thailand's plan to promote cannabis as a cash crop. About a third of its labor force works in agriculture, according to the World Bank, in a region notorious to harsh penalties towards illegal drugs. Thailand becomes the first country in Southeast Asia in 2018 to research, legalize, and medical use. The kingdom has also loosened local laws around cannabis, Thai drinks, and cosmetic companies last year rushed to launch products with hemp and CBD, the compound that does not give users a high, after their use was approved for consumer goods. In a further Facebook post on May 10th, Anutin noted that Thai companies registered to do so could sell cannabis products that contained less than 0.2% THC, the part of the plant responsible for getting people high. Anutin, quote, "This will enable people and the government to generate more than 10 million baht per year in revenue from marijuana and hemp." Kitty Chopak, the Bangkok-based cannabis entrepreneur, told CNN the law was meant to pave the way for people to use the plant in medicinal teas or soups. Quoted, "It will still be considered criminal if you don't have a legal prescription and you have to be a patient of some form of ailment for this to work. Only then will you be able to grow cannabis at home and use it however you like," adding, "Even though the recreational use of the drug remains illegal, smoking weed will happen, and there's no way the government can stop that." Yeah. Thank you. You guys are listening to Smoke News Radio with your host, Jason Brodsky. Next, we have from the ChicagoTribune.com, state issues permits for new craft cannabis operations to start construction amid ongoing turmoil in Illinois marijuana industry. And a judge has authorized the state to hold a corrective lottery for dispensary applicants that filed lawsuits challenging the licensing process. These two developments mark small but significant steps in long-delayed process of expanding access and improving competition in the state's legal marijuana industry. Last August, the State Department of Agriculture announced the first 40 craft grower conditional license winners. It took until Wednesday for the first three of these applicants to get their plans approved and obtain permits to begin construction. Those businesses, the Galaxy Labs, Mint Cannabis, and Starbuds, are all majority Latino or African American owned. Of the 40 conditional license winners, 80% identify as non-Anglo and 88% qualified as social equity applicant, generally meaning the majority owner or family member had a minor cannabis conviction or came from poor areas with high rates of cannabis arrests, according to the state. Until those licenses were awarded, marijuana businesses in the state were almost entirely Anglo-owned. Up to 60 more craft licenses were to be issued last year, but those were held up by lawsuits. In March, a judge cleared the way for those licenses to be issued. Last week, agricultural officials began notifying the first applicants eligible for those new licenses. The applicants have 10 days to fill out paperwork and pay the license fee of $40,000 or $20,000 for social equity. Proposed rules for the next round of dispensary licensed applicants expected to be considered by a state agency this summer appear to open the process to out-of-state and non-social equity applicants. Flowering cannabis plants, the rules for, would be part of a new process that does away with a license application that ran hundreds of pages in a costly process that required lawyers and other experts to complete. The new application would be a two-page online form, and anyone who qualifies would automatically be entered into a lottery. Applicants could qualify through the prior social equity definition, though the new rules would eliminate what critics called the slave provision that allowed owners to qualify by hiring people from areas most impacted by the war on drugs. For the first time, applicants instead could qualify by meeting four of seven new criteria. those criteria would lower the percentage of ownership by social equity applicant to 26%, require businesses to operate in designated areas affected by the war on drugs by at least 25% of cannabis products from social equity owners, by at least 30% of goods from vendors owned by minorities, women, or people with disabilities, and pay $250,000 grant to a social equity business, or $500,000 to the state's Cannabis Business Development Fund. Changes would water down the state's social equity provisions and would appear to respond to complaints that the state's residency requirements violate the U.S. Constitution's Commerce Clause. Those rules are likely to be considered for approval by the state's Joint Committee on Administrative Rules, or JCAR, this summer. Despite the latest movement, 185 pending dispensary licenses remain on hold in court while litigation proceeds challenging the licensing process. Meanwhile, three top state cannabis officials are leaving their jobs. The Governor J.B. Pritzker's spokeswoman on cannabis, Christy Green, the Cannabis Regulation Oversight Officer, Danielle Perry, and the state's top official for regulating dispensaries, Brett Bender. Now, Paul Isaac, Deputy Secretary of the Department of Financial and Professional Regulation, thanked them for their service and becomes the interim Cannabis Regulation Oversight Officer. The job was once known as the Cannabis Czar, but has limited power since Reed Regulation is split up among at least half a dozen state agencies, and since licensing has gotten bogged down in court fights. Still, an attorney for some of the license winners, Ryan Holtz, welcomed the development, saying it shows light at the end of the tunnel for the craft growers and the 185 dispensary licensees. Quoting, "I don't think anyone would tell you this licensing process has gone exactly as planned. Regulators were given an impossible task to grade every application like an exam. There's too many ways to game the system." Fantastic. Next, from Smoke News Radio with your host, Jason Brodsky, from Benzinga.com. German health minister speeds up cannabis reform for this summer. Germany decriminalized medical cannabis in 2016 and in November 2021. Leaders of Germany's incoming governing parties stated they had a formal agreement to legalize marijuana. The German health minister, SPD-affiliated Karl Lauterbach, said he wanted to put cannabis reform on the summer legislative agenda, reported HubSpot. As quoted in the German media, Lauterbach said that he has changed his mind about this in the past 2 years. "I've always been an opponent of cannabis legalization, but I revised my opinion about a year ago," quotes he now believes that the dangers of the status quo outweigh the dangers of recreational reform. Statements about cannabis reform were part of his call for stepped-up action on several pressing issues facing German healthcare system. From internationalcbc.com, according to the Institute for Competition Economics, the legalization of recreational cannabis could bring the country some 3.4 billion euros in tax revenue. What's more, it would save roughly 1.3 billion euros annually for the judicial system and create 27,000 new jobs. With twice the population of California, a fully legal Germany could grow quickly. The BDSA forecasts adult use sales beginning in 2024, with the nation expected to account for more than a third of total international legal cannabis growth from 2021 to 2026. All right. Next on Smoke News Radio, to your host, Jason Brodsky, from the New York Post, we have the WNBA's Brittany Grenier makes first public appearance since Russia arrests. Who was arrested at a Moscow airport in February for allegedly carrying cannabis vape cartridges, made her first court appearance Friday and got her pretrial detention extended by a month. Her lawyer, Alexander Boykov, told the Associated Press he believes that the relatively short pretrial extension suggests the case could come to trial soon. Quoted, "We did not receive any complaints about the detention conditions, client." Grenier has been in detention for nearly 3 months after being arrested in mid-February for allegedly having the cannabis vape cartridges in her luggage. The two-time Olympic gold medalist faces 5 to 10 years in Russian prison if convicted on drug smuggling charges. The Biden administration says Grenier is being wrongfully detained. U.S. and WNBA officials have worked towards her release without visible progress. The Russians have decided Grenier's case as a criminal offense without making any political associations. Washington and Moscow have kept diplomatic channels open amid deeply strained relations since Russia's 24th invasion of Ukraine. Grenier appeared in handcuffs. Last month, the U.S. and Russia carried out an unexpected prisoner swap, trading ex-Marine and accused spy Trevor Reed for Konstantin Yaroshenko, a Russian pilot serving a 20-year federal sentence for conspiring to smuggle cocaine into the U.S. The U.S. made the deal in part because Yaroshenko had already served a long portion of his prison sentence. The Russians may consider Grenier a potential part of another such exchange. The State Department's classification of Grenier as wrongfully detained suggests the U.S. will be more active in trying to secure her release as her case plays out. The status places the athlete's case under the purview of the department's special presidential special envoy for hostage affairs, which is responsible for negotiating for release of hostages and Americans deemed wrongfully detained. Also working on the case is a center lead by Bill Richardson, the former U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, who helped secure the release of several hostages and detainees, including Reed. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. You've been listening to Smoke News Radio with your host, Jason Brodsky. I appreciate everyone for listening today. We have a song from Jack Johnson about the news coming up in just a moment. I appreciate everyone for listening and wish you a beautiful, beautiful night.
A billion people die on the news tonight, but not so many cried at the devil's side. Well, Mama said, it's just make-believe. You can't believe everything you see, so baby, close your eyes to the lullaby. Decide that it would be alright to put the music behind the news tonight. Well, Mama said, you can't believe everything you hear. The diegetic world is so unclear. So baby, close your ears on the news tonight, on the news tonight. The unobtrusive tones on the news tonight. And Mama said, why don't the newscasters cry when they read about people who die? At least they could be decent enough to put just a tear in their eyes. But Mama said, it's just make-believe. You can't believe everything you see. So baby, close your eyes to the lullaby.